Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Future Skills by Perttu Polanen. Narrated by Rich Miller. Introduction. Stories have always been important, but in the future they will be even more important. In a globalized world, stories create connections between different people. What makes one person wiser than another? Once in kindergarten, my friends and I, all about 5 years old, were faced with a difficult problem. As we had been going about our normal play, an unexplained hole had opened up in our worldview. Rushing to our teacher, Petri, we asked what makes a person wise. After considering this for a moment, he said that a person becomes wiser the more times he's been around the sun. Wisdom develops in the human brain as this circular motion continues, he said, and usually the older a person is, the more time they've had to rotate through different recurring patterns in life and in the natural world. It was all about circles. That's why parents are usually wiser than children. We were entranced by this information. Rushing out into the yard, my friends and I spread our arms out wide and started spinning. We continued spinning for hours, believing that we were doing ourselves a great service. The more circles we turned, the wiser we were getting. Now, almost 20 years later, I've learned that Petri was right. The more time a person has spent looking around and seeing things from different perspectives during their life, the wiser they're likely to be. Whenever someone accuses me of being wise, I say that the fault is in my early childhood education and those hours of spinning. There was also a second day when we found another hole in our view of the world. We didn't know why people die. This time, Petri said that people have blood inside them, and if the blood runs out, the person can't stay alive anymore. We didn't know that the human body is always making new blood, though, instead thinking that each of us only contained a set amount of blood. When I fell playing outside and scraped my knee, I froze in terror when I realized that precious blood was leaking out of me. I thought I was losing years of my life. The next time someone reminded me to be more careful, I knew that the adults just didn't want me to die prematurely from blood loss. Petri was wrong that time, but so was I. We should never be afraid of small accidents and injuries, because we learn best from our mistakes. Sometimes people who experience setbacks and disappointments just get stronger. Sometimes it's the people who have to do the most catching up who go the farthest. Exertion doesn't weaken the heart, it strengthens it. The skills of the future cannot be taught from teacher to student like multiplication tables or grammar. It's hard to make multiple choice questions about courage or to assign points to a person's curiosity, even though these are very important skills. Many of the skills we will need in the future are learned through trial and error. Sometimes you have to change your assumptions, and sometimes you fail spectacularly. It's frustrating that recess is more important than class time for developing many skills, and that after-hours gatherings are frequently more useful than team meetings. This book isn't just for school children or college students. It's for all of us. We're in the midst of an unprecedented period of technological development, and we need lifelong learning at home and at work. We can't be sure what skills the future will demand of us, although expert predictions can provide some direction. If I was in charge, I would put a best before date on all diplomas and certificates. At least one thing is clear: we will be required to continue to adapt to new innovations. It's important to understand what changes we face at the individual and societal levels, but it is even more important to focus on what isn't changing. The wisest course of action is to develop now the skills that we will need throughout our lives. Currently, we tend to value speed when what we really need is depth. The world needs to be made better, not just more efficient. We must continue to develop the human qualities that have always been important to us, because technological developments are likely to make them even more important in the future. In the midst of constant change, the most valuable thing isn't what is changing, but what is not. The idea for future skills came from pondering what schools should be teaching for people to succeed in the future. What would I hope we were being taught if I was in school now? The result was a sort of curriculum of the skills that I believe success will hinge on in the years to come. I'm not going to encourage you to go out and become a coder, but instead to focus on problem solving. And I'm not going to try to force you to learn Mandarin Chinese, but rather to develop your communication skills. Right now, the need for coders is huge, but in a couple of decades, machines may be coding most of their algorithms themselves, and coders' work will consist of different tasks. And in the future, maybe we'll use real-time AI interpreters that provide translations directly into our earbuds from any language wherever we are in the world. This book focuses on the skills that will still retain their value in 20 years. Lifelong learning needs to start with lifelong skills. If a skill receives additional emphasis in the future, it has earned its place in this book. Today, most people are optimistic that in the future, human beings will continue to excel over machines in some areas, but that may turn out to be wishful thinking. Machine sensors are more accurate than our senses. Their cognitive resources leave our brains in the dust, and they can work together seamlessly, while each person is different and imperfect. So it is impossible to give any guarantees about specific skills far in the future. But for now, we would do well to develop the skills that will continue to differentiate us from machines for the time being. The good news is that what makes us different from computers is also what makes us happy. The skills of the future will give you a meaningful life. The skills we value are largely determined by the demands of work. The history of work can be distilled down to two transitions, from muscle to head, and from head to heart. Originally, work was very physical, and what people paid for was strength and endurance. But then the Industrial Revolution brought us machines that replaced muscle power. There was no sense in competing with tractors in force delivery or trying to perform tasks faster than machines in factories. Instead of force, we needed intelligence and education. So what was in our brains came to be our primary asset. Now we are faced with a new transformation. In the information revolution, computers are displacing the competences that we recently considered so valuable. There is no point in racing the internet or in trying to find information better than Google. Machines can store more data and retrieve it more precisely than we can. And the human brain doesn't hold a candle to binary systems when it comes to computing power. Our processors are second rate, so we have to shift our focus to the skills machines lack, the skills of the heart. A machine has no character, no personality, and cannot behave like a human being. The human contribution to work has already shifted once from the muscles to the head, and next it will shift from the head to the heart. Farmers became factory workers. Factory workers became knowledge workers. And knowledge workers will become, perhaps, creative problem solvers. The barn was exchanged for the factory for the office, and the office for, well, we'll see. We've been fighting against machines for centuries, and nearly always found that the machines were better, forcing us to move on to different kinds of work. First, we were afraid that machines would steal our work on the farm, and then we were afraid that machines would replace people in the factory, and now we're afraid for people's office jobs. Digitalization is no different in this sense. Although change is frightening and we may try to resist it, the world will move forward regardless. Work has always changed, but now the disappearance of old professions and the birth of new ones is happening at an unprecedented rate. The change is familiar, but the speed is new. The danger is that we will pass on obsolete knowledge to the next generation and teach our young people how to succeed in the past. Perhaps our kids aren't spoiled after all. Maybe they just know how to do things we don't appreciate yet. We should understand that in the future, different qualities will receive more attention. Now we need the person and the personality in addition to the skills, because a machine doesn't have a personality. In Silicon Valley, I asked a renowned inventor and futurist what he would study now if he was young. He said somewhat provocatively that the only sensible long-term choices would be philosophy and the arts. Although there are some hot professions now, investments in your own critical thinking skills and character will get you the farthest ahead in the future. So the surest choice will be to trust in the utility of soft skills and the humanities in the work of the future, because they develop the kind of thinking that is difficult for machines. One of the key questions about the skills of the future is how humans differ from machines. What are the fundamental differences that make humans and machines see problems differently? The answer to this will determine the skills that people should focus on developing and the work that only people will be able to do in the future. Machines, and here I mean computers and information technology in particular, need data. Machines like simple, well-defined bits of information, so numbers, values, and figures are their favorite foods. If you tell a machine that a glass contains 10 blueberries, it will understand you. But if you tell a machine that a glass contains a lot of blueberries, it will be confused. A machine would understand if you told it there were the square root of 100 blueberries, 60% of the volume of the glass of blueberries, or a random integer between 9 and 11 of blueberries. But so far, it would have no ability to process words that require understanding context or complex interpretation. Machines will continue to develop at tremendous speed in these areas, but ambiguous expressions will still be as difficult for machines as they are sometimes for humans. And what if I had used an example that involved the words good or evil? The machine would have been just as confused. Defining good and evil requires a human. We can argue whether blueberries are good or bad, or whether the glass is half full of berries or half empty. We can tell why there are blueberries in the glass in the first place, and talk about how they look as a still life. We can squabble about all of this, but a machine can only give us a numerical value. We are optimists and pessimists, but fortunately, machines are neither. Imagine an ant running across the floor and jumping onto your head. This idea is silly because we know that an ant can't jump onto your head without superpowers. We've seen anthills and we've learned that ants, despite how strong they are, can't jump anywhere near that high. But what if we gave the same situation to a computer to evaluate? What tools would the machine use to solve the problem? A machine can't remember its childhood or the summers it spent playing in the woods or the first time it encountered an ant. It's also never poked an anthill with a stick. A machine has to know all the numbers, because without them, it can't solve problems. How big is an ant? How long are its legs? What is its muscle mass? How strong is it? How does it jump? How tall is the target? The equation becomes complex, but that is not an overwhelming challenge for a machine. In the end, the machine might come up with an answer that an ant can jump 0.0133295 centimeters, but not 183.5 centimeters. A person and a machine come to the same answer, but reach the conclusion through different kinds of thinking. Tasks that require contextual understanding, situational awareness, and interpretation related to culture, history, or social norms are tasks where we humans are superior to machines. We have all the information we've accumulated over our lives, and a machine only has the data that's been given to it. Even if a machine has a million data points and has reviewed more information than any human alive, it will still give its answer as a probability that only a person can interpret as right or wrong, good or bad, a lot or a little. Every skill in this book requires this kind of thinking and contextual interpretation that machines just can't do. The faster technology evolves, the more deeply we need to understand and interpret humanity. Ultimately, technology is only a reflection of us. It makes us strong and gives us influence, but it doesn't change who we are. Technology can't teach us what's important. That is left to us, because it requires interpretation. We have a habit of improving the things we can measure, but many of the skills of the future are difficult to quantify with any universal accuracy. Both in mathematics and grammar, there are simple right and wrong answers. But how would you define right and wrong related to curiosity or compassion? What would the test look like that would tell us that your moral courage had risen from a C level to a B level on a school grading scale? Can we administer a test and prove that your communication skills are now 12% better than last year? In a job interview, if you say that you're honest, persistent, and passionate, you can't show any certificate, test result, or diploma to support your claim. However, these sorts of skills are increasingly necessary in the world of work, even though it's impossible to test them in traditional ways. There are methods for measuring skills like this, for example, the Berkeley Innovation Index, but they aren't airtight. Like personality tests, they can tell you a lot about your personal qualities, but their results aren't truth with a capital T. We're used to learning multiplication tables and drilling irregular verbs into our heads, but we can't memorize something like compassion, so most educational institutions don't include it in the curriculum. We have to go to driving school and pass a test to earn the right to drive a car, but we don't have to undergo any testing to become parents and raise our children for 20 years. In the end, it's all about what we decide to measure and how. Traffic signs and the rules of the road form a coherent system with clear boundaries, but parenthood is more multidimensional. We need to learn to see value in important skills like this, despite the fact that they are difficult to measure. Our age has been characterized by a focus on efficiency, and our goal has been to accomplish more with less. There's nothing wrong with that, because efficiency works really well as long as we know what we want, or as long as the limitations of our planet can handle it. We can optimize and prioritize. However, the future will also challenge this way of thinking. In an uncertain environment, we may not know what we want or what is expected of us. That's why thinking in terms of efficiency won't work anymore. Now we're being asked to be prepared for multiple different future scenarios, often simultaneously. Because the future is uncertain, our attempts at prediction will inevitably be inefficient, at least in retrospect. We have to get used to this. We know that climate change is real, but we do not know where the next wildfire will break out. We know that the economy will experience another recession, but we don't know where, why, or how. We know that certain events are sure to occur, but we still don't know how to predict them accurately. However, prediction remains important, because even if the final scenario plays out differently than we expect, the exercise of making predictions will still yield valuable byproducts. Prediction allows us to react more quickly to changes when they happen. This is future literacy. In exactly the same way, we should work on developing all of these different future skills, even though some of them are likely to turn out to be more important than others. We know, for example, that creativity is important, but we don't know whether a machine can learn to be creative. We know that perseverance is valuable, but we don't know how that will manifest in everyday life when everything can be predicted using huge masses of data. It's very possible that some of my predictions about the abilities of machines are too conservative. There are already many tasks computers can perform that we would traditionally have thought always require human creativity. For example, analyzing the plots of movies and then making recommendations for a story arc. Maybe in the future, a machine will be able to write the sequel to this book. We can't be sure about the future, which is why a certain amount of self-deprecation is important. I don't know the future, and neither do you. And no one can be perfectly prepared to deal with something that hasn't happened yet. Some of the most respected institutions in the world have been completely off the mark when they've tried to predict what is to come. All we can do is try our best and develop a diverse skill set. When I was in kindergarten, Petri showed us how the Brazilian football virtuoso Ronaldinho practiced his ball skills. He became a great attacker who made it into the Champions League, scored amazing goals, and won championships. I saw his success as a simple sequence of events, and that motivated me to practice for hours on end. We bought training cones and built a goal in our backyard where I would spend hours shooting. Now I wonder how we can convince children that age to read or attend concerts. Reading will improve your imagination. Attending concerts will help you learn to listen more intently. Both examples are true, but the goals may not feel concrete enough. We must believe that educating our hearts will bring results, success, and happiness. It's hard to know what you may want to do in the future, but it's even more difficult to say what you can do today to bring that about. This book will help with both. 1. Technology and the future. Technology will change each of our lives in the future more than we can imagine. Is that good or bad? We are living through what may be the most exciting time in the entire history of the world, because technology is advancing at an accelerating pace and changing our environment faster than ever before. In the future, we will need to know the basics of artificial intelligence, robotics, virtual reality, blockchain, nanotechnology, and synthetic biology, in the same way today we understand how to use a computer, what the internet is, and everything a phone can do. The ultimate purpose of technology is to be better than us or to help us to do things better. There isn't enough strength in our muscles to fly from one continent to another, so we invented airplanes. Our eyes can't see into other galaxies or investigate anything at a cellular level, so we invented the telescope and the microscope. And because our brains can't remember everything at once, we developed a way to store data on computers. In this sense, the human body is very limited. Travel across the ocean is possible by boat, but not swimming. Our eyes can't record the colors of the sun setting over the sea very well, but a camera can. And we can't send that picture to our friend using telepathy, but with the internet, it happens instantaneously. When our skills are superseded by new inventions, or we lose our jobs because of innovation, that isn't anything unnatural that we should fight. It's the whole point of technological development. Without this kind of innovation, we still wouldn't have fire, the wheel, or computers. Technology is a tool, and a neutral tool at that. It is not fundamentally good or bad. The use it is put to defines its morality. A knife can be used for good or evil, just like fire. If fire were invented today, would it be legal, even though so much evil can be accomplished with it? For hunter-gatherers, fire was a necessity, so questions like that never occurred to them. Fire only became a threat later when it was misused. Will the same thing happen with artificial intelligence? Even though some technology may appear radical, seen from the future, it may be a very natural step forward, even a necessity. New technology has always aroused fear and concern because it deviates from what we're accustomed to. As we evaluate benefits and costs, we must consider the spirit and needs of the age. There was life before fire, but taming fire made everyday life better. We got along without artificial intelligence, but soon it will help us every day, if it isn't already. The most significant inventions of our day relate to information technology, to things that process information in some way, such as computers, smartphones, and blockchain. Gaining a greater understanding of these innovations can broaden our perspective in new, immensely interesting ways. People need to gain practical experience with how sensors work, how networks are built, and how code is written, to choose only three examples. When we understand the basics, our relationship with technology is more positive, and it's less likely to feel like magic. Likewise, if we want to understand the logic that underlies information technology and how it can be applied, we need to experiment with it. A general awareness of the direction the world is moving in and what megatrends are on the horizon is critical to our success and our ability to form an opinion about developments in society, politics, and technology. What would happen if we spent a little time every week at school, at work, and with our friends talking about trends and news related to the future and technology? And what if the TV news didn't just cover current events, weather, and sports, but also future news? It's important for us to make talking about the future a part of our daily lives so that we can keep up with technological change. Then the change won't frighten us, it will excite us. Instead of feeling anxious, we won't be able to wait. Fortune tellers and folk remedies. There are many challenges in predicting the future. We've traded fortune tellers for futurists and omens for trend analysis. Although futurology is a science, predicting technological developments is usually easier than predicting people's reactions to it. When technology challenges our old mindsets, our reactions can be inexplicable. People predicted that the internet would increase our free time and reduce our amount of work, but instead we live in an increasingly hectic society. Urgent work assignments and stress come home with us on our phones and laptops. The goal of social media was to connect people and improve our social lives. It did that, but it also funneled people into peer groups of increasing similarity. And now, when we think of social media, the first things that come to mind are confrontation and the undermining of democracy. Globally, unemployment is at its lowest point in decades. But on the other hand, careers are projected to be divided into shorter terms with several employers. In the workplace, we are encouraged to be active on social media, but you can lose your job over a single tweet. Before, we were more willing to share of ourselves, but nowadays, we're more careful about whom we help. We are building our walls higher instead of our tables larger, even though the world has become more connected. What are the future trends we don't yet see? Although our intentions may be good, we can't know what the end result will be. People's reactions to change are difficult to predict, and few are able to anticipate these types of phenomena in time. Predictions themselves also affect outcomes. If 1 week before an election someone issues a prediction that one party's support will see a huge rise, many voters may react by switching candidates or parties. If no one had ever given the prediction, the voters wouldn't have changed their minds at the last minute. Predictions are not important in themselves, but they are important in terms of what they cause in us. What the media reports, what's written in books, and what experts say changes our behavior and alters events. That's why predicting the future is difficult. For example, if the media is constantly going on about how artificial intelligence is taking jobs, social media is going to hell in a handbasket, cryptocurrency is replacing real money, or entertainment is shifting to virtual reality, those predictions can influence the final outcome, ironically enough, sometimes in the opposite direction. Technology will also have unknown downsides, many of which we would prefer not to predict. For instance, what will be the long-term effects of the internet and smartphones on social welfare and politics? Big trends also bring about counter-trends. Who would have believed at the beginning of the millennium, at the height of the rapture over the Nokia 3310 telephone, that within 2 decades we would start setting up technology-free zones because we need a break from our phones, if only for a moment? Who would have believed that millions of people would end up suffering from addictions to their phones? The future is unlikely to turn out the way we imagine it now, and that's why we have to discuss it from different angles. Frightening before, funny after. In the midst of accelerating change, our attitudes, concerns, and laws are the slowest parts of technological progress. Caution is not always a bad thing, but history has taught us that often we can be bolder than we are. Now it feels completely normal for trains to run, airplanes to fly, robots to make goods for us in factories, and pacemakers to be installed in people's bodies to regulate their heartbeats. But these were once radical ideas, and people feared them. For example, in the 19th century...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?